I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, it's debate night, not only for America, but here in Washington State, as the candidates for governor meet face-to-face for the first time. We'll talk about what's at stake and the clear choice that voters here have to make. Plus, an acclaimed chef in Spokane says he's closing down over crime and disorder, what he's asking of city leaders there, and teacher by day, Jack King Goff by night. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. It is double debate day, double debate night in America. Of course, we're going to have the first meeting between Trump and Harris. That's 6 to 8 p.m. our time, Pacific time, on ABC News. And then after that, the first gubernatorial debate between Dave Reichert and Bob Ferguson. That's happening at 8 p.m. on King 5 News. And then the, which one is it? Is it KATU, I think, over in Spokane, if you're over on that side of the state, whatever their affiliate is, NBC. And then, most importantly, after those debates happen, we're going to be joining you live across platforms with our analysis and reaction to both debates, I think with a particular focus on the gubernatorial debate. I mean, we'll talk about Trump and Harris, obviously, but there's certainly no shortage of talking heads who are going to give you all the deets and all their opinions on what happens with that. Look, I mean, it's a significant night. My thoughts about Trump and Harris. But again, I mean, you know, there's a million national talking heads that can offer their thoughts on what needs to happen there. I mean, the very basic level. Hopefully the moderators are fair. I thought the CNN moderators were fair. That was a different beast, though, because that was Trump and Biden. But I think Trump needs to employ the same tactics. You know, he let Biden just sort of show America how not up to the task he was from a health perspective. So what Trump needs to do is show the nation, and like Kamala Harris show the nation, that she's not up to the task from a policy perspective, from an knowledge perspective, from a leadership perspective. So we'll see if that happens. And, you know, hopefully he doesn't let her. He debates with women differently. Did you ever notice that? Maybe that's just because, I don't know, but like he gets the Hillary Clinton debates much different than the Joe Biden debates, you know, and so I don't know if he's going to get some zingers off. Kamala Harris had her famous when she was debating Mike Pence. She'd do the I'm speaking. Okay. If she got interrupted. So I don't know. Maybe she'll bust that out again. But we'll see. There's a lot of important issues. I hope they focus on the economy. That's going to be good for Trump, but it's also the most important issue for Americans is the economy right now. As far as the gubernatorial debate goes, you know, there's a clear distinction that needs to be drawn between, do we continue to do what we've been doing for 40 years? And that would be choose Bob Ferguson, because he's a fourth term of Jay Inslee. He continues 40 years of Democratic control of the governor's office. Or do we try something new? And that's really what Dave Reichert needs to get across, more so than any individual issue or policy perspective. He needs to just convince the probably 10% of voters in that race that are undecided. The last polling that we saw in the gubernatorial race showed that there's like, I think it was 7 to 9% that really haven't made up their minds between Bob Ferguson and Dave Reichert. So you're trying to reach them, right? These are probably, you know, the Mark Mullett type voters, I would guess. I think Mark got, what, 6% or so in the primary election. And so I don't think that Dave Reichert needs to be someone he's not to appeal to those voters. I think he just has to successfully convince them that we have to change something. Whatever the issue is, homelessness, crime, affordability, I mean, lack of housing, drug abuse, whatever the issue is, it always comes back to, do you want to keep doing what we've been doing for 40 years? Because this is where it's got us. Our budget's bigger than ever. We're spending more money than ever. We're taking more of your money than ever. And look at where we're at. So do we keep, and it doesn't make sense. Do we keep doing that for 40 years? Or do we try, just try, something different? So convincing those moderate, independent-minded voters that, like, heck, you might have some concerns about voting for a Republican. Maybe you really are worried about the abortion issue or Trump or whatever it is. But, you know, do you really believe that it's that dangerous to try something else for 4 years? It's almost like, I hate to compare it this way, but it's almost like an abusive relationship. Is that, like, in any classic abusive relationship, you know, if the woman stays, right? It's like, well, the abuser, not to say that a woman can't be the abuser, but the abuser convinces you, like, you're nothing without me. It's scarier to leave. There's too much unknowns. And so you stay with the abuser, right? I feel like that's where Washington State is at right now. They're kind of trapped with an abuser because voters are too worried to try something new or to, you know, go off on their own or whatever it is. So that's really fundamentally, if Dave Reichert can make that point tonight and convince people that it's time just to try something new, I think that will be a win for him. He can't beat, I don't know if this is mean to say, he can't beat Bob Ferguson in a debate. Bob Ferguson is an attorney. He's like a master debater. He's a master, nothing from Nicole, master chess player. Sorry, you can focus on what you're focusing on. I just made a joke. You know, I was a little lowbrow. I thought you'd appreciate it.
I did.
Okay.
I did.
But Dave Reichert doesn't need him beat him in a technical debate. You know, Bob Ferguson can be over there and nerding out and all this stuff deep on policy. The reality is that he's failed in his job as attorney general. Crime is up. The murder number of homicides have more than doubled from 2012, when he took office as the state's chief law enforcer, to today. The FBI stats, according to a study of them this year, says Washington's the eighth most dangerous state to live in the nation. Washington. Never used to be that way. So, you know, of course, there's going to be the bombs that are going to come up tonight, the potential landmines for certainly for Dave Reichert. I hope that King 5 News and the Seattle Times can come up with some hard questions for Bob Ferguson, but I anticipate that Dave Reichert will be asked about abortion. I anticipate he'll be asked about Donald Trump. You know, he hasn't been willing to commit to whether he's going to vote for the former president or not. So I can't imagine that King 5 and the Seattle Times, which are hyper obsessed with those two issues, wouldn't bring that up. But it's also an opportunity for Dave Reichert to set the record straight. Bob Ferguson has been incredibly deceitful about his record on abortion, you know, calling him a MAGA right-wing extremist. People are going to see Dave Reichert. They're going to see what he's like, and they're going to hear from them, and they're going to realize that's not a MAGA extremist. So hopefully Dave Reichert can get Bob Ferguson to put those lines of attack to rest for a little bit, or to expose them as utter falsehoods and fear-mongering, which is what Bob Ferguson is running his campaign off of. So again, debate night tonight, for those of you who are going to watch the presidential debate and the gubernatorial debate, all of that action starts at 6 p.m. Pacific time. The presidential debate is going to be 2 hours, 6 to 8 p.m., and then immediately following that is going to be the gubernatorial debate from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific time. And then after that, we will be right here with live debate reaction and analysis streaming across all of our platforms. So I hope that you can join us for that. And then tomorrow I'm on vacation. So that's why we're doing a live show tonight, is because I can't stew on all of that for 5 days and leave you guys hanging, then come back on Monday and discuss it. So Nicole and I are going to stay late, and then we're both going on vacation tomorrow. Yeah, but I think those are the big keys and the big takeaways is, you know, you don't have to, for Dave Reichert, he doesn't have to be everything to everybody. He just needs to speak to the 10% of voters who are undecided and just tell them, look, either we can do the same thing we've done for 40 years. If you like those results, if you like that path, great. Like, absolutely vote for Bob Ferguson. But if you're not happy with the path we're on, vote for me. And here's what I'm going to do differently. So I am very much looking forward to 3 hours of political debate tonight, followed by analysis. I hope you can join us. All right. And, you know, when it comes to the gubernatorial debate, I mean, a lot is at stake, obviously. And when it comes to, you know, trying to convince Washington voters that there's two clear choices and that's it, either we keep going the way we're going or we try something new. You know, this has gone beyond, certainly in the last 5 years, like a Seattle issue, where Seattle was sort of the extreme outlier in the state, and they were doing and trying all these crazy things and crazy policies. And, you know, people who are Democrats, but who weren't living in the reality of Seattle, were a little disconnected from that, I think. you know, they weren't seeing day to day the homeless crisis, the drug crisis, the crime crisis hadn't really hit them in a meaningful way. It was still relegated to just certain pockets, like in South King County and in downtown Seattle. But what we've seen increasingly so in the last 5 years is these quality of life issues have reached places that never dealt with them before. And in Spokane, one of the things I've expressed concern for on this show is Spokane all of a sudden seems to be eager to try some of the failed policies that got to Seattle to the place that it's in right now. And I don't get that. Like, I don't understand why Seattle couldn't have learned from Portland, couldn't have learned from San Francisco, but it's now Spokane's like, hey, Seattle tried that. Look at Seattle, but let's try it too. Maybe it'll work for us. And now Spokane is starting to see the consequences of that. There is a kind of celebrity chef, I guess I would call him. He's very acclaimed. His name's Chad White. He has a bar and restaurant called Zona Blanca Ceviche Bar. And he announced this week that he's going to be closing it. He said, it's a heavy heart, deep reflection. I write this letter to share the difficult decision I have to make about the bar. He posted this on Facebook. He went on to say, you know, he's been very successful, obviously, as far as chefs go. So he says, so why close? The hard truth is that like many businesses in downtown Spokane, we faced a challenging and tough road. The increasing crime, visible drug use, and the damage to public and private property have made it harder and harder to maintain a safe environment for our team and partners who are like family to me and for you, our valued guests. On top of that, despite pouring all my time, energy, and finances into keeping our doors open, I've had to face the reality that I've left very little for my own family in both time and security. So it was a very long kind of open letter to the community on Facebook saying we can't continue to do this anymore. And, you know, also for restaurants, in addition to crime and disorder, all of those things lead to less foot traffic, less customers coming in the door, no matter how good of a restaurant you are, increased insurance rates. And as business owners, all of that mounts. And I mean, a lot of restaurant owners, even ones like this, they're not making money hand over fist. And so all of those things contribute to an untenable financial situation. He went on to say, to our elected officials, I humbly ask you to recognize the urgency of what's happening in our downtown. If someone like me, who has been fortunate enough to gain national acclaim and enjoy immense support from the community, is struggling this hard to keep my doors open, I can't begin to imagine what it's like for those who don't have the same privileges. The challenges we face are real and growing. And if we don't take immediate action to address the safety and well-being of our downtown, many more businesses, especially the smaller ones, will face even greater struggles in the months ahead. Now is the time for us to come together and protect what makes Spokane so special. He is putting up a giant red flag that Spokane voters would be very, very wise to recognize. And there were businesses in Seattle over the past 10 years that tried to do the same thing, that tried to say something, and they were, you know, vilified and called NIMBYs, you know, not in my backyard, or, you know, they couldn't. It was like saying something, being a pragmatist and saying, no, we can't have homeless people sleeping in the alcove of our business. It was like, well, you can't say that. You're an extremist. You're right wing, whatever it is. And so businesses that tried to raise a red flag and set off alarm bells over the last 10 years in Seattle, by and large, were just kind of ignored. Spokane has an opportunity not to do the same thing, specifically Spokane voters, and saying, look, clearly, things are getting to a point where if we don't do something now, it's going to spiral out of control. The question is, are elected leaders in Spokane listening? You'll recall that Spokane had a Republican mayor. She lost the last election. Now Lisa Brown is their Democratic mayor. Well, I got to say, I'm not too confident in the leaders of Spokane based on what has happened in the days after Chef Chad White announced that he's closing this restaurant. So he ends up having a press conference. There's a lot of interest, obviously, in this. And the community members show up and the media, and they tried to get elected leaders to come. The Center Square reported on it. The headline, Spokane council member apologizes on behalf of city for state of public safety. Great headline. Like, somebody apologized? That's awesome. But let's dive in a little more. It says, council member Jonathan Bingle held a press conference on Monday apologizing on behalf of Spokane following the announcement that Zona Blanca, an upscale restaurant, would close after being broken into 20 times. Following the announcement, the local business community called on their elected officials to host a press conference to apologize. While a few tuned in, to an informal email thread to make their voices heard, only Bingle rose and publicly apologized at the event. Sheldon Jackson, chief executive officer of a development company, told the Center Square that he asked the rest of the city council, Mayor Lisa Brown, and police chief Kevin Hall to attend the event 5 or 6 times without any luck. So here you have people reaching out to their elected leaders saying, hey, you know, we're having this press conference on public safety. Will you attend? Asking 5 or 6 times, the mayor, the police chief. No one shows up except this one council member. And I give this council member credit. Don't know anything about him. Don't know anything about his politics. In the context of this, I don't care to know, because it takes a lot to apologize. And I'm starting to realize that from politicians. They just are unwilling to admit fault or to admit mistake. You know, the press conference, well, it wasn't a press conference. The memorial walk that we were at a few days ago for Ruth Dalton in Seattle is a prime example of this. I wasn't going to get into it at the time because it just felt inappropriate. But now that a few days have passed, you know, you have Ruth Dalton, elderly dog walker murdered in broad daylight in an attempted carjacking by an 8-time felon who was living in some like housing that's funded with taxpayer money. And so, you know, days go by, I think it was 2 weeks that had gone by since Ruth Dalton was killed. And her granddaughter says that told me on this show, no one in the city's reached out to me. We haven't heard from the mayor. We haven't heard from the police chief. She hadn't heard up to that point from any of the city council members, although after that she did hear from one. So anyway, they put on this memorial walk for Ruth Dalton. And Nicole and I went, my husband went, community members went, and city leaders who had said very little about it showed up. And it's like, okay, that's fine. I'm glad you're there. And we were kind of sitting there and Nicole and I were on the peripheral. And, you know, Mayor Bruce Harrell gets up. I don't know how many times I rolled my eyes during that man's remarks. I was just blown away. I mean, nothing of substance, nothing to speak to the pain and anger and concern and fear of the people standing in front of him from that community. It was just so vapid and so meaningless and no apology. As the mayor... And I remember interviewing Bruce Harrell when he ran for mayor when I was in mainstream news, like, oh, the buck stops with me. You know, I'm the mayor, I take responsibility. Then get up there, and even if you don't freaking mean it, say, hey, the crime crisis is out of control. I take responsibility. I apologize. We're going to fix this. None of that. None of that.
He actually said leaders need to do more, but didn't say himself.
No, it's like that starts with me, right? Yeah. That starts with me. And so there's this inability to recognize, like, someone has to take, it starts with someone taking responsibility. And is it all to blame? Is Mayor Bruce Hale, for instance, to blame for everything? No. Is Lisa Brown in Spokane to blame for everything? No. Right before her, Nadine Woodward, who is the Republican mayor, it's not as if there was no crime when she was the mayor. It's not as if Lisa Brown's elected immediately overnight, all of a sudden there's crime, homelessness, and drug abuse. So no, but it starts with someone being willing to take responsibility and then to do what needs to be done, to say no to soft on crime policies, to say no to people who are using drugs out in the open, to say, no, you can't camp in alcoves. No, we're not going to allow that. We've got shelter for you. If you won't take it, get the hell out of here. But that's the thing, is like they won't allow themselves like an ounce of humility, an ounce of self-reflection. And to say, look, I asked for this job. You can blame me for everything. I take blame. Blame me. And we're going to move forward from here. And so, yeah, the fact one council member shows up, mayor doesn't show up, police chief doesn't show up, none of the other council members show up, although they said stuff on a private email chain, like, oh, yeah. It's like, okay, you need to tell your community that you're going to do something about it and take responsibility so they can then hold you accountable to whatever promises that you might make for them. But Spokane is rapidly going down the same path as Seattle. Rapidly. And if Spokane voters don't stand up and put an end to it right now, you are going to be in the same position as Seattle. And let me tell you from experience, that takes a long time to dig yourself out of. I don't know how long it'll take Seattle to dig itself out of this situation, if it ever has the political will to do it. Look at Portland. I mean, in Oregon, you know, they decriminalized drugs. 2 years later, they're like, oops, we shouldn't have done that. And now they're trying to dig themselves out of that mess. Look at San Francisco, shell of its former self. You really don't have enough examples of what extreme progressivism and socialist policies do to once beautiful, thriving cities. Come on, Spokane, for the love of God. And I think that's another thing that's at stake in the governor's race, is having that message from the top down matters. Having a law and order public safety governor who supports law enforcement, who's going to say no to some of this ridiculous shit that they keep pushing in Olympia. You know, you can't control everything as governor. You can't control what the Seattle City Council chooses to do. You can't control what the Spokane City Council chooses to do, but you can let people know you think it's unacceptable. And you can let people know that, you know, if there's any opportunities to withhold state funding for cities that aren't doing X, Y, Z, we're going to do that. And you can absolutely stop and put a big fat veto on anything that the uber progressive Democrat majority in Olympia wants to do to help out the criminal element. You know, stop the hemorrhaging. It's got to start with someone. You know, speaking of the ridiculousness and just almost like a, it's like a parody. So many of these things that are happening in our state are like, if SNL wrote a skit about it, this is what they would do. And this next story, look, I'm going to start by saying no one deserves to die, right? No one deserves to die. And so I'm sure that I'm going to get attacked by the Antifa types for this. But you'll recall in 2020 that there was a protest. I mean, there's many protests in the summer of 2020 after George Floyd, but there were a lot of protests that took over the interstate. And we still see that today, right? Because we never shut it down then, so it still happens today. That's what you get when you give mice cookies. So anyway, one of those resulted in the death of a 24-year-old named Summer Taylor. There was actually two protesters who were struck on the interstate that night, Diaz Love and Summer Taylor. Diaz Love was injured, not killed. Summer Taylor was killed. And the circumstances of this, so it was a weird time, right? Because even if there had been the political will to arrest these protesters, it was the middle of the pandemic. It was the early days of the pandemic. And the King County Jail wasn't accepting bookings unless you're talking about like a serious felony crime. So the Washington State Patrol was kind of like, well, what the hell do we do? Because they're taking over the freeways, but we arrest them and take them where? The jail's not going to book them. So in this case, when these protesters opted to, I believe it was the Mercer Street on-ramp or somewhere near there where they went on the interstate, the State Patrol just said, shut it down. Let's just shut the freeway down. So they shut the entire freeway down in both directions and just let these absolute children take over the freeway, because their issue is more important, and what they have to say is more important than anyone else and more important than anyone else's ability to move about freely. So they were on the freeway, and then there was a driver who was trying to get around this closure and ends up getting on the freeway the wrong way. So got, I think, on to like via an off ramp, and so ends up getting on I-5 going in the wrong direction and hitting and killing Summer Taylor. So that happened, and right now there's been a 2-week civil case where the estate of Summer Taylor is suing the Washington State Patrol for her death. Like, let that compute for a second. So the family of Summer Taylor is suing the Washington State Patrol for her dying on a freeway while illegally protesting there. Okay, so wrap your mind around that before I play you these two clips of video. So the attorney representing the estate of Summer Taylor was making closing arguments yesterday. And I don't even know how to set this up, because it is such an absurd way of thinking. This is from King 5 News.
Law enforcement says photos show protesters storming I-5. Over the course of 3 weeks, it would happen regularly.
The state made the decision to change its rules. The rule had been keep the protesters off the freeway and arrest them.
Kohler says the Washington State Patrol was allowing protesters to be on I-5.
They made the intentional, deliberate absolutely knowing, but apparently uneducated decision to leave the ramps, the access ramps, whether they're off ramps or on ramps, the third access point to a freeway, they left them open.
What do you even say about that? 2-week trial. What do you even say about that? So because your client, because Summer Taylor decided to illegally protest on a freeway, shut it down for everyone else, and the state patrol didn't close the freeway good enough, because the state patrol didn't immediately spring into action and have enough people there to deal with this act of criminal unrest, that they could close every single off-ramp, on-ramp, everything. So it's their fault that she's dead. That's an insane way of thinking. And the fact that this wasn't thrown out, like, before it even got to the stage of a trial. It's insane. And again, I'm sorry for her and for her family. But what she was doing was illegal, and what she was doing was dangerous. There's a reason why pedestrians, for any reason, can't be on a freeway, can't be on a major highway. It's because it's dangerous. And so when you shut it down, and I mean, you know, frankly, I mean, the city of Seattle, the state of Washington, they ask for stuff like this. They ask for stuff like this. And I don't really feel bad, per se, for the state of Washington for getting sued over this, because this is the environment they fostered, where you have these activists who believe they can get away with anything, and that if something happens to them, they're the victim, because you've taught them that that's true. You know, we've let them protest on the highway for years and years and years. But it's just crazy that the attorney here is arguing, well, if the state patrol had done its job and arrested her, she would still be alive. That is crazy. But this is the state of things, right? You know what else is crazy? The arbitrary number. The attorney is talking to the jury, right? It's a jury hearing this in the civil case. And throws out a number based on how much she thinks Summer Taylor's life is worth.
I believe that the number is 24. Because that's how old Summer was.
So, okay. Not only is it a case where your client did something illegal, died as a result, and you want to blame the state for not protecting her safety when she committed an illegal activity, but then you just say, oh, and we want $24 million because she was 24 years old. We're just going to just throw out a number and hope the jury accepts it. It's insane. I really hope that a jury doesn't award that. And again, like, I feel bad. I feel bad for the family. I feel bad for all of that. But you also had a case where the driver of that car was sent to prison, which I also said on this show, I don't think is fair. The driver of that car, I don't know what the ultimate charge was that he pled guilty to, but who, you know, went the wrong way on a ramp and ended up on a closed freeway. This is a black guy who goes to prison for hitting people on the freeway who were protesting, like, against white people protesting against, like, racism against blacks. And a black guy ends up in prison for it because you were doing something illegal. Had you not been illegally protesting on the freeway in the first place, the black guy wouldn't be in prison. Summer Taylor would be alive. But it's everyone else's fault. Is that cold? Is that cold of me? That's absolutely insane. So I don't know how the jury's going to, what the jury's going to do in this case. I think it would send a horrible precedent for the jury to award money to a protester who was killed or injured while committing a criminal act. That's just insane to me. Had it been a peaceful, lawful protest and, you know, a police officer shot someone or hurt someone during a peaceful, totally different situation, obviously. But that's not what this was. And to call it negligence, how many patrol vehicles, let me just say one more thing about this. How many state patrol vehicles would have immediately been required to close down every on-ramp, off-ramp, both directions of the freeway to keep it safe, adequately safe enough for them? It's wild. This is the situation we've fostered. We have to do something different, and we have to teach these criminal activists, that there are consequences for their actions. And sometimes, unfortunately, that consequence might be that you lose your life because you're engaging in conduct that is incredibly dangerous. And there's no one to blame for that but you. All right, coming up next, Jack King Goff. Say it three times fast, Nicole.
Jack King Goff. Jack King Goff. Jack King Goff.
Gross, Nicole. Why are you talking about that? Well, we're going to talk about a teacher that is being criticized by some parents for what they do by night. We'll discuss. First, I have talked about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, down 40 pounds, lost 30 of that in 2 months, and just feeling great. I love every time I post a picture yesterday. Because I was just feeling good in my little white outfit. And I told Nicole, I was wearing all white yesterday. I said, will you take a picture of me? I just feel good. I feel like it would be good Eastside Weight Loss Clinic post. And so many people were commenting, oh, I did the program too. I'm down 30 pounds. I'm down 40 pounds, whatever it is. For me, it works because it kind of got me off that weight loss roller coaster. Like, does my weight still fluctuate a little bit? Sure. I mean, in the summer, I had a lot of fun. I went on vacation, did these things. But you can always come back to these simple, healthy lifestyle changes that I learned through the program to just feel like you're back on track. So do what I did, what a lot of Undivided viewers and listeners have done. Just schedule. It starts with a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. You can schedule it now at eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. You can do the consultation by phone. You never have to go into their office in Kirkland if you don't want to. So they make it super, super easy. Okay, do I have to talk about this? So we've been getting emails from parents in the Peninsula School District. Well, it's the Gig Harbor Peninsula School District at Peninsula High School. We've gotten several emails from parents asking us if we'd talk about this, who are understandably upset, saying this is definitely something that shouldn't be ignored. There should be pressure from all angles on the district to make the right decision for our students. So we decided today we'd talk about it. So there is a teacher in the Peninsula School District named Kelsey Wayne. Kelsey Wayne is a teacher by day and by night. Kelsey Wayne is Jack King Goff. That is a drag queen name. Yes, Kelsey Wayne, a high school English teacher at Peninsula High School, by day, drag queen Jack King Goff by night. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, I would say, like, generally speaking, very generally, if you have a teacher who's moonlighting as something else, hell, even doing drag shows, that doesn't bother me. Like, just that picture in and of itself doesn't bother me. If you want to be, you know, I've been to a million drag shows. I love a good drag show. And I have been to drag shows of all variations of, you know, from very sexually explicit to, you know, like somebody dressed as an old lady kind of doing an act or something, or singing or something like that. So I think there are certainly variations to this conversation. So if you're a teacher and then at night you like dress in drag and you go perform in front of adults, I really kind of don't care, right? But this seems to be a little bit more than that. And I think there are some concerns the parents have that are very valid. And how does I don't want to misgender Kelsey Wayne. He, they?
You know what? I haven't been able to find anybody refer to this person as anything. Yeah. So,
well, let's see. On their LinkedIn profile, Kay Wayne, high school teacher, greater Seattle area, Californian by birth, Washingtonian by choice, and passionate educator dedicated to, promoting education and social justice.
Mm-hmm.
All the pieces are falling together. But again, like, I really don't care. If you're an educator and you want to do a drag show at an adult club by night, you do you. The issue that parents have is the sexually explicit nature of, obviously, the name and some of the things that Kelsey Wayne, aka Jack King Goff, has posted, such as on their Instagram page, Jack King Goff, he, they, the orgasmic drag queen. The orgasmic drag queen, 7,300 followers. That's not bad for Instagram.
No.
Okay, so we're talking about orgasms. I would also note that this account was not private when parents first found out about it. All of their accounts were shut, you know, locked up. So the public nature of an account like this that high school students could very easily find was concerning for parents, as were posts like this. Jack King Goff, lock up your daughters. Jack Goff is here. If you had a daughter at Peninsula High School and their male teacher posted a picture and said, lock up your daughters, Jack Goff is here, how would you feel? Probably not good, because that sounds incredibly predatory. And that's where it gets serious, and that's where it gets ridiculous. The drag queen thing, or drag king, whatever it is, fine. But when you are a teacher responsible for the education of kids, and you are on a public-facing social media profile posting sexually explicit words, even talking about being the orgasmic drag king, and then making even a joke that people should lock up their daughters because you've arrived, that is incredibly concerning behavior. But what happens on this show when we ask school districts about incredibly concerning behavior? You want to say it with me? Because we all know the line by now. We do not talk about personnel issues. And that is the case here. Nicole reached out to the Peninsula School District this morning, or maybe it was yesterday. They responded, thank you for reaching out with your inquiry. As a matter of policy, the Peninsula School District does not comment on individual personnel matters or the private activities of staff members outside of their employment with the district. We remain committed to fostering a professional and supportive environment for all students, staff, and families. That makes it sound like they don't care. Like, this is the private activities of staff members outside their employment with the district. Again, fine. I'm not debating the district on whether a teacher can do drag shows. But if there was a male high school teacher who took to Facebook or Instagram and posted a picture of themselves, let's say shirtless, and said, lock up your daughters, you don't think the police would pay that high school, male high school teacher a visit? I do. If I was a parent, I would want them to. I would probably call 911 and say, hey, my daughter's male teacher just posted on Facebook, lock up your daughters. That's disgusting. So it's not the private activities that I'm concerned with. It's the public comments. And if you're going to do something like that, if you're going to act like that, if you're going to engage in that kind of private activity, whatever it is, no matter how salacious it is, then at the very least, you put it behind a wall. You make sure that your accounts are private so that only adults, only friends, only family can see when you post things like that. But when you're talking about high school students who know social media like the back of their hand, you don't think that they're going to see that? You don't think they're going to see you, their teacher who teaches them English every day, calling themselves the orgasmic drag king, Jack King off saying, lock up your daughters? This is really crazy stuff. And on top of that, I'll just say, I can't play the audio of it because it'll be a copyright issue. There's a serious, I'm going to say, can I say that?
I don't know. I mean, you can say whatever you want.
No, I can't. I don't want to assume the mental health of someone. But some of these videos of this drag king, Jack King off online, seem very unhinged. Mm-hmm. You want to play one, Nicole?
Sure, here we go. And this is not blocked. This is available for
YouTube.
Students.
This is on YouTube. Like, what? Like, that seems like someone who's not well. What's with the tongue? Mm-hmm. For anybody listening on the podcast today, right choice. That was the right choice. Like, I get it. They're a performer, right? They're putting on a role or doing whatever it is. And, like, I'm not flicking their tongue all around. It's weird. It's creepy, especially in combination with their other posts. Jack King Goff teaches high school kids, including girls, lock up your daughters, orgasmic drag king, going around and doing all these tongue weird. And that's just one of many videos. But he sets all his videos to copyright music, so I can't even play you some of the weird ones. I'm going to get to this in the Daily Subscriber Show poll coming up, because I asked you guys, like, what is your level of comfort with a public school teacher on their free time being a drag king or queen, regardless of the nature of it? But this goes back to, it's so unacceptable that we have public employees paid for with our tax dollars where we're not allowed as the media to get, or the public or parents to get, any answers as to, is this person being disciplined? Is the school where my kids go? Does the school think this is acceptable? Is it acceptable to say, lock up your daughters? And we just have to tolerate it because the teachers union is so powerful and this is what they've negotiated, and we're not allowed to know the disciplinary issues around any teacher, no matter how, unless they're criminally charged with something, right? Those are the only cases where, oh yeah, you know, a teacher was criminally charged with XYZ. So then you find out about it in court documents, but the schools, all of them, keep this stuff under lock and key. I think that's wrong. I don't know how you change it. I guess in collective bargaining or something, the WEA will never allow it to be changed, but it is genuinely insane. And parents might have a little more luck with this, right? Going to the school, talking to the principal. Hey, I'm worried. Any parent that has a high school daughter or son has a right to be concerned when a teacher is posting something sexually explicit and saying, lock up your daughters. Because if it was a male teacher, straight, if it was a straight, what do they say? Cis straight male teacher, then that person would be under like criminal investigation for saying something creepy like that. So we have to weed these teachers out. And just the LinkedIn profile should have been a big red flag. Passionate about education and social justice with the trans flag colors as the background, which is fine. But it's like, if you can't keep it out of school, or if you can't keep it to yourself, that's a problem. It's like Ian Golash in Seattle, the public school teacher who, he's doing all these anti-Semitic rants and all this stuff. But then he goes out, he engages in criminal acts of unrest with his students. And it's like, how is that? He harasses the news media and he gets to keep his job.
Yeah, I think that it's, I too don't care what people do in their personal life. However, when you are a teacher, I believe you're picking a career like you and I probably couldn't get away with something like this in our free time, because it would probably impact our other job, right? And as a teacher, you're choosing to be a role model for children. And that includes what you do outside of school, not just when they're right in front of you. Yep. So when you choose to be a teacher, you're choosing to be a role model, and you have to choose your outside activities accordingly.
Yep. Here's the other thing I'd say. Do you think the left wing in Seattle, let's say they found out a cop, a Seattle police officer, was doing drag on their free time, saying sexually, it'd be everywhere, and they would have no problem naming and shaming them.
Absolutely.
No problem in the world. Or if it was a conservative who was doing it, whatever it is.
Well, it's like if it was a politician, would you not say that, something they do in their, or would you not say that that would be considered in what they do on their off time in their job description or whatever, in their platform, whatever? You're gonna, all of those things impact, that's your whole personality, your whole lifestyle that people have to consider when you want a job. I'm sorry, you have to. 100%. You cannot just say, my job is totally separate from my private life. Nope. It's not. It's all your life. And so you have to deal with those consequences, and especially when it comes to kids.
And
you have chosen to be a role model.
To that end, what disturbs me is that you have teachers who don't realize that, don't recognize that. They're like, hey, I have an obligation here to be a good role model for the kids. If I really care about education, I want to be a good role model for them. So no, I'm not going to go posting things about how I'm the masturbation king of the drag world or something and lock up your daughters, because that reflects poorly on me as a professional. So I think it also speaks to that generation, and like a little younger than us, right? And sort of that extreme gender ideology, sort of they think they can do and say anything.
Absolutely. Get away
because
with anything.
They're allowed to do and say anything. And so they don't believe there are going to be consequences. I don't even think it enters their mind that consequences are possible, because they've never had not only have they never had consequences for anything, but they are given special treatment in every area of their lives in a state like Washington. It's like, what do you mean I can't post that my name is Jack King Goff and I'm the masturbation
king of, and I'm
want to lock up your daughters. It's like, what do you mean? I've never gotten in trouble before for anything like that. So it's ridiculous. Baron of Gray Matter put a $2 super chat, said, it's not fine, Brandy, higher standard. I think referring to me saying, if you want to be a drag queen as a teacher, fine. I do think
I don't think it's fine in this way. So if you were the way, grandma drag queen, drag teacher, whatever, I don't really care. But anything sexually explicit, and like I said, those videos are on YouTube still. So yes, they've locked down their Twitter, but the YouTube is still there. There are still lots of ways to see his picture, his videos, all of the things. So.
Yeah, it's hard though, because then you'd get into regulating what kind of drag queen can a teacher be on their free time. You could be the granny drag queen, but you can't. It comes down to, like,
again, role model.
Strip the drag queen thing from it. Like, put that aside for a second. It's the content. If you're posting about, I have to revisit it. If you're posting about being or an orgasmic whatever, if you're posting hide your daughters, like lock up your daughters, and that's what that means, is like, oh, I'm going to come get them, you know?
Even if that was posted, before he was a teacher, right? But you need to know, like, there are consequences. Things on the internet live forever. And that is not being enforced very well. That is not being reinforced in children's minds very well. Because it's not okay.
Make consequences great again. Make consequences great again. All right, we'll get to some unbelievable, some national news coming up. First, if you don't own an RV but you want to enjoy Natchez RV Resort, have no fear. Have we told you that they have some amazing park models, turnkey, that are ready to go? So you don't need an RV. You can go check out one of their park models. It's a perfect way to make Natchez RV Resort your home away from home. Also, they just opened up their brand new huge clubhouse, 4,300 square feet, featuring an expansive great room, indoor-outdoor fireplace. It's an entertainer's dream. I mean, if you have visitors coming, they got a gourmet kitchen, gym, fitness center, a ton of space to gather with family and friends. You absolutely have to see it. And then outside the resort, new clubhouse they opened, they've got first-class amenities, pickleball, tennis courts, playground, dog park, miles of recreational trails, and their beautiful saltwater swimming pool and spa will be open in just a few weeks. So check them out, RV or not. You can go check out one of their park models, NatchezRVResort.com, NatchezRVResort.com. And did I mention 300 days of sunshine? Wouldn't that be nice? We're going to get into that depressing era soon, where we're going to be without sunshine for far too long. And we're all going to be wanting to visit somewhere else. So NatchezRVResort.com. All right. Apparently, the media is suddenly waking up to how extreme Kamala Harris was acting just 4 years ago. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. And CNN of all outlets. Holy smokes. So, I'm very critical of the media, but if they do their jobs, I hate that I have to give them credit for doing their jobs. Like, this should be a matter of course. I shouldn't have to get on this show and be like, oh my God, CNN actually exposed Kamala Harris's extreme views from when she was running for president in the 2020 election cycle. So this is, CNN has something called K-File, where they'll, dig into like documents and stuff and do more sort of in-depth investigatory reporting. So K-File was on with Aaron Burnett, we've talked in a lot of ways, and this is going to be very clear tonight, that Kamala Harris is like a chameleon. She's a totally different candidate than she was pretending to be in 2019 while she was trying to get the progressive vote. So CNN posted this story, K-File. Harris told ACLU in 2019 she supports cuts to ICE funding and providing gender transition surgery to detained migrants. So they go in here and they talk about all the details of it, et cetera. But let me just play the video of K-File on with Aaron Burnett.
This was a questionnaire that she filled out for the ACLU. And this questionnaire is really an interesting snapshot in time of that 2019 Democratic primary. Kamala Harris was trying to get to the left of Bernie Sanders. She was trying to get to the left of Elizabeth Warren. And you really see that in a lot of these answers. And I want to walk our viewers through a little bit of what she said. Let's just take immigration and look at what she said here. She said on immigration, she made this open-ended pledge to end immigrant detention. She said she supported taxpayer-funded gender transition surgeries for detained migrants. She also said she supported
taxpayer-funded gender transition surgeries for detained migrants. She actually said she supported that.
She wrote and answered in the affirmative when she was asked this. Oh. And she said she also supported it for federal prisoners. Now, she also pledged to slash immigration detention by 50%, close all family and private facilities, and decrease funding for ICE, and then end ICE detainers with local law enforcement.
Yeah. So Erin Burnett acting like she actually said that. But I think that's kind of funny in the context of, like, Erin Burnett was, like, more shocked by that or concerned by that than wanting to end ICE detention. Like, I get it. This taxpayer-funded surgeries for transgender illegal immigrants is crazy and absurd. But that's going to be, like, what, 10 of them compared to ending ICE detention and the disaster that that could be for our country? So it's like, oh, the, you know, that's finally what gets them. That convinces Erin Burnett that Kamala Harris was a total extremist on immigration in 2019 is, I support taxpayer-funded, how does this issue even come up? I support taxpayer-funded transition surgeries for illegal immigrants in ICE detention. How nuts is that? But again, she's been saying crazy things for a long time. She's just suddenly backing away from it because she wants to act like a moderate as she's running for president. But this was a 2019 interview that she did on trans, it's called Transform. So it's like a trans interviewer, but where she also talks, not in the context of just ICE detainees or illegal immigrants, but taxpayer-funded transition surgeries.
When I was Attorney General, I learned that the California Department of Corrections, which was a client of mine, I didn't get to choose my clients.
Right, a client of the Attorney General.
A client of the Attorney General, right. Of the Office of Attorney General, that they were standing in the way of surgery.
For prisoners.
For prisoners. And there was a specific case. And when I learned about the case, I worked behind the scenes to not only make sure that that transgender woman got the services she was deserving. So it wasn't only about that case. I made sure that they changed the policy in the state of California so that every transgender inmate in the prison system would have access to the medical care that they desired and need.
Yeah, the which, how'd she refer to that? The transgender care she deserved. It's like, okay, you're talking about an inmate, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't get medical care, but you're saying and change the law in the state of California to make sure that taxpayers gave that inmate the transgender surgeries they deserved? That's insane. So these are all things she said in 2019. I think what's a failure of the media is that it's taking this long to really show that juxtaposition that, hey, you know, she said in 2019, and then you were getting into, you know, I think this period of time, obviously, in 2020, as that campaign continued around George Floyd and all of this, where it was like the more progressive, the better, the more left wing, the better. She didn't even want to talk about like being a prosecutor. She tried to get away from that as much as she could. And now it's like, that's all, I'm tough at the border, all of this stuff. So Donald Trump needs to bring this stuff up tonight. And honestly, the ABC moderators need to ask her about it, especially on the immigration issue. Like you said, you supported ending ICE detention. You said, and they'll never bring up the transgender thing, but Donald Trump can bring it up. You said, quote, I support transgender surgeries for, or in surgeries for transgender illegal immigrants funded by the taxpayers. So if Donald Trump does not bring that up tonight, that's a total missed opportunity, because I would guess 99.9% of Americans think that's absolutely insane. They might not say it, they might not admit it, but they think that's insane, because it is insane. So man, I'm looking forward to this debate tonight. I didn't look at the format. The debate between Trump and Clinton was interesting because they were like sitting and they could get up and stand and sort of mosey around. And that's how you got those shots where he was like lurking behind her, you know? I don't know that this is going to be like that, but I hope to keep mics on the whole time and all of that stuff.
Oh, the mics are going off. That was
the
thing.
Oh.
She wanted the mics on. They said, no, mics will be muted.
Okay, well, that's good, because that worked well for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think that works in Trump's favor. That's probably why she wanted the mics to be muted.
It's weird.
Yes. All right, we're going to get to a little bit more national news coming up next on the DEI front. First, it's Testimonial Tuesday, so why don't we talk about one of our wonderful Undivided viewers who had a fantastic experience with our wonderful sponsor, Wes Jones of SellWithWes.com. Sharona Rhodes and her husband went to sell their home, and they were a little concerned about, you know, they had to do some repairs and all of this, but Wes came in, he did his thing. And one of the benefits of having Wes work with you, especially if you're making cosmetic repairs or something before your home hits the market, is they guarantee their work. And so at some point in this process, Sharona Rhodes and her husband, an issue came up, and Wes took care of it.
We knew that we had done everything that Wes had asked of us. They weren't going to find anything crazy. A couple Mondays after that, their realtor found a water leak It was evidence of a water leak. There was no actual water leak.
Oh, great.
Wes and his company puts a warranty on the house when they list it. They did everything they needed to do, and the warranty replaced the water heater.
Yeah, so they come in, warranty on the house because we're listing it, so we got your back. That came up. They only had to come out of pocket like $90 as opposed to thousands of dollars in this whole big debacle. So sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. It is simply a better way to sell your home. All right, dipping into national news, a Harvard professor of all people writing for the New York Times saying DEI is not working. Again, I guess... so even if you wake up too late, like, welcome. So this is written by Paul Brest and Emily Levine. Paul Brest is a former dean and professor emeritus at Stanford Law School. Dr. Levine is an associate professor of education and history at Stanford. The headline, why does it say Harvard? Oh, sorry. Not Harvard, Stanford. DEI is not working on college campuses. We need a new approach. That's the headline in the New York Times. The two professors write, rather than correcting stereotypes, diversity training too often reinforces them. Oh, you don't say. And breeds resentment, impeding students' social development. An excessive focus on identity can be just as harmful as the pretense that identity doesn't matter. Overall, these programs may undermine the very groups they seek to aid by instilling a victim mindset and by pitting students against one another. You think? This is exactly what we talk about with the crime crisis in Seattle and elsewhere. We're like, you teach these like young kids of color that they can't do anything, that they're victims. The system is like designed and stacked against them. So why would they play by the rules? Why would they like try hard? Because you're creating a victim mindset. The article goes on to say, American campuses need an alternative to ideological DEI programs. They need programs that foster a sense of belonging and engagement for students of diverse backgrounds, religious beliefs, and political views without subverting their school's educational missions. Such programs should be based on a pluralistic vision of the university community combined with its commitments to academic freedom and critical inquiry. The current system is not good for Jews at Stanford and other universities. It's not good for Muslims either, and it's certainly not good for society as a whole. I really think that we're witnessing, and it's not going to happen all overnight, but I think we're witnessing the downfall of DEI. You have too many of these companies that have come out and said, you know, we're winding back or eliminating entirely our DEI programs. And, you know, I can see how those are kind of the first things to go if you're in an economic pinch as a company. But there are some companies that are, was it Microsoft? Clearly not in an economic pinch. Like, hey, we're getting rid of our DEI, you know, task force, workforce, whatever it is. And then you have more and more academics who are now speaking out and saying this does the opposite of what you think it's intended to do. It creates a victim mentality. It makes people more divided, not more united. I really hope that there's a question about DEI in the debates tonight, because we need a candidate who can properly articulate without seeming like racist or off-putting why DEI is so bad and so dangerous and such a waste of money. One of the first things that I would do if I were the president or the governor is I would eliminate every single DEI position in every single agency. You know, and it's not that you don't want a diverse workforce. It's not that you don't want equality rather than equity. It's not that you don't want people to be included. But what I've always said about the DEI efforts in Washington State is like, we live in one of the most progressive places on earth, and you still believe that you need to force progressives to not be racist and to be inclusive and welcoming and, you know, want equality, it does, and diversity. So it's offensive, kind of. I mean, it's not kind of offensive. It is offensive that the government believes it needs to force us to be good human beings and force us to be inclusive. It's like, no, but also we have to get back to, as a country, if we hope to not be overtaken one day by China or Russia, we have to get back to meritocracy. The bottom line, people should know that if they're the best person for a job, they're going to get it. If they're the best person for a scholarship, they're going to get it. If they're the best person of their gender on, you know, the track field, they're going to win. And that's just not the place that we're in right now. And I think it's a dangerous thing to set aside meritocracy in the name of all these other initiatives. So that coming from two Stanford professors and you know, most impressive, I think, the New York Times being willing to publish it as a guest essay. So maybe we are witnessing the downfall of DEI after all. All right, talking about the debate tonight, our friend Zach Abraham, who we have on every week. Of course, we don't have a Thursday show this week, so we won't be talking to him. But when we had him on last week, he's nothing if not laser focused on the economy. Hearing about that issue, of course, brought up during the ABC News debate tonight, he offered some advice to Donald Trump.
I'm looking at him going, my political strategy would be rope-a-dope, right? Sit back and let her punch herself out. Sit back and let her talk. When your enemy is destroying himself, don't interrupt, right? But that's what scares me about him is I'm like, you know, Donald has to bark at every passing car. So if he can be restrained and stay out of the gutter and not hurl the personal epithets and insults and all that kind of stuff, just look, her record is horrific. Right. It's just like she tees it up for you. You don't need to do anything. Right. Just don't talk and give her a mic.
Yeah. And that'll be a little bit easier, I think, for Donald, considering his mic will be muted. So he might try to interrupt. But I say just let her talk. Zach Abraham, chief investment officer at Bulwark Capital, also hosts the Know Your Risk radio podcast, where he talks about economic issues all the time. If you want to be more well versed on them, you can check it out. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Also, Bulwark Capital Management's chief focus is managing risk for your retirement portfolio, because you only get one retirement. So if you want to go to KnowYourRiskRadio.com, you can get their free Common Sense Investing Guide. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. You just can learn about how Bulwark analysts track current events closely so they can adjust to market risks every day to help shield your portfolio as much as possible. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll quickly. It had to do with this drag issue. Should public school teachers be allowed to participate in drag shows in their free time, regardless of how explicit those shows might be, yes or no? Two-thirds of you saying yes right now, which I'm actually kind of surprised by. Nicole, so for once they agree with me? Is this the one time our listeners agree with me? Kenneth says, Brandy, you say you're fine with it. The more we allow this kind of behavior as acceptable, the more of it we'll have. What we permit, we promote. Kathy, teachers have in the past been held up to a higher standard because of their influence on our kids. Getting a job as a custodian or at Mike McDonald's or in a band is different than drag. Sorry, I'm old-fashioned. Carissa, I don't really care what the teachers do in their free time as long as it's not illegal and no crossover into the classroom. I would also keep a close eye on lesson plans and whatnot to make sure it wasn't bleeding into the classroom, because that's kind of the thing too, right? If a teacher's out there doing drag, are they more ideological? Are they going to push certain narratives? She says, I tend to be pretty liberal in many beliefs, so I may be a little more patient and tolerant of this kind of thing. But I say, you do you, boo, as long as you aren't pushing it onto my student. And I think noteworthy is I published this poll before I told you the kind of conduct. Mm-hmm. So the question is, you know, whether you might feel the same given the post about hide your daughters or lock up your daughters. But that to me is kind of behavior that's almost, you can bifurcate from the drag shows. It's like, okay, the drag shows is one thing, but this is like predatory. So you can look at it as a different issue entirely. Michelle D'Angelo, drag doesn't need to be completely vulgar. If they are a teacher, it should be kept hidden. Also, reason 3045, why I homeschool. Yeah. If you homeschool, unless you're a drag queen, you know for sure your kid's not being taught by one. Bill Akers, yes, and parents should be able to have school choice and teacher choice. That's the big thing, too, is like you're making it really, really hard for parents to choose any other education for our kids, and then you're putting them in front of teachers like that. Karina, last one. Yes, they are adults and can do whatever they want on their free time. An issue arises when they talk about or promote it at school. That's when I draw the line. And I think, to the point that some previous commenters were making is that a teacher you have a little more of a close eye on? And to say, let me look at their lesson plans and their supplemental plans and all of that. I don't know, maybe the answer. Holy smokes, what's with all the super chats today? Is that because we're going on vacation and people are going to miss us?
Super supportive of that.
Wow, thank you guys. That's why I love you. When I first started the show, I was so worried to miss an episode. And I am. Like, we don't like to miss episodes, obviously. But you guys are great. And you understand that right now. We need a break. Let me see. Baron of Gray Matter, $5 super chat. I've been commenting in all the local MSM YouTube reports saying Bob Ferguson is responsible for the crime, drug use, etc. Not to just vote blue. Good work. Doing the Lord's work. Let me see. Amber Monroe, eighth most dangerous state and first in property crime. And that's just the property crime we know of. You know, the only statistic that you can't fudge is homicides, right? Because there's a dead person, or there's not, unless there's a case where you don't know someone's been murdered or they're missing. That's very, very rare. But property crimes and a lot of other crimes, frankly, did somebody even report it? And when you have response times that are so bad, police staffing that's so low, no follow-up, a lot of times people are just saying, I'm not even going to tell my insurance company because I don't want to get dropped. So they're just eating the loss. And you know, this restaurant in Spokane that's closing, broken into 20 times. At some point, are you going to stop reporting the break-ins? Like, it's been, this is the 20th one, nothing's happened. So I always have a hard time with property crime numbers. So the fact that we're first in property crime, knowing, according to Amber Monroe, knowing that that's probably just the tip of the iceberg. Bill Biz, $20 super chat. Brandy Nicole, have you seen any current polling regarding 2117? The last polling I saw was that it had more support for the yes side for repealing the Climate Commitment Act, but it was still pretty close. And as you guys know, the no on 2117 campaign is spending a lot of money, pushing a lot of information out there. So I don't know how much that might change public opinion. Matt Gilbert with a $50 super chat. For Brandy and Nicole's drinks by the pool, enjoy your vacation. Diana Manning, thank you, Matt. That's very sweet. Mm-hmm. Diana Manning, $20 super chat. Great idea. Here's more libation funding. I love you guys. That's so nice. Scully, $10 super chat. Thank you for all your local content. I'm so happy you fell into my feed. Oh, that's nice. I'm happy I fell into your feed too. Because man, I've been not falling into feeds lately. Big tech is trying to keep mm-hmm. me down. Again, I had a post on Instagram yesterday flagged as abusive. It was the picture of me in the white dress. It was just a picture of me standing here in a white dress. And it said it was a violation of their content for branded content. And I challenged it because it's probably just an AI bot. And the thing I wrote on it, because I'm wearing all white, and I said, who says you can't wear white after Labor Day? I'm like, I guarantee some white. some racist AI bot's like, oh, she's talking about being white. No.
Or it saw the flags behind you.
Oh, yeah. Saw the flags and thought it was like, you know, white nationalist content or something. So I'll see what Instagram does. But they did this on a previous post that was completely fine. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the issue is. Let me see.
Like to make
here.
Our lives difficult.
Seriously, I don't need anything else to make my life difficult right now. Country guy, Harris is such a chameleon that she changes her accent based on her audience. I love that. I love that.
Her job. And Hillary.
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny yeah. that both of them did that.
Yeah. What was Hillary's? I don't feel no ways tired or yeah. something. And like, I loved the clips of Kamala Harris giving the same speech in two different places. In one of them, she totally puts on a Southern accent, and Karine Jean-Pierre was asked about it. And she said, told Peter Doocy, I'm not even gonna answer that. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, we have the video though. It's very clear, right? Although when I go to Minnesota, my Minnesota accent comes back thick, but that's my genuine accent.
And I see how that happens, but that's when you're having a conversation with somebody. I think it's not when you're giving a speech, right?
So it's just wild. Julie, the activist drag teacher likely is a teacher specifically to influence kids and be a role model by exposing them to her other career. That's textbook activism. Yeah. Jeremy Sorensen, inmates get better medical and dental than the majority of the working. Isn't that the truth? TZ Burton with a $5 super chat. Thank you, Brandy Nicole. Local politics affects us more than federal. Local politics is where we can make the biggest changes, even the dog catcher. Yeah, for sure. And frankly, I mean, we talk a little bit about national stuff, but there's a million national shows. And so we try to. I think what we do best is local politics and statewide politics. So we want to focus on that. Nancy C., we'll close with you. Some advice for Donald Trump. Trump just needs to have one word answers and let her dig a big hole for herself. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. if you're a good moderator, you're not supposed to ask yes or no questions. So for most of them, he'll maybe have to elaborate a little
one
bit.
One phrase, yes. one sentence.
Maybe one. Okay. With that, Nicole, thank you. Everybody say goodbye to Nicole.
Oh, bye.
Bye. We'll be back on Monday. Sunday, technically. Well, we still have our Sunday show, but, you know, we'll be in the flesh on Monday. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. My closing sanity check is simple today, and I want to talk specifically to undecided voters. Take some time to watch the gubernatorial debate tonight and try to really ask yourself why we wouldn't try something new. Really sit and ponder, why would we not, after all these years with the same party in control, after all the crises that that path has led us down, after all the money that we've thrown at problems with no success, why would we not try something new? If we don't do it this year, I'm afraid we never will. So ask yourself that question if you're on the fence. Ask your family and friends that question if you're on the fence. And let's try to right the ship. As a reminder, we will have live election night reaction tonight at 9 p.m. Pacific time. The presidential debate on ABC News will be 6 to 8 p.m., followed by the gubernatorial debate on NBC, whatever your local NBC station is. That's King 5 News in Seattle. Immediately following that at 9 p.m. or whenever it concludes, if it goes a couple minutes over, maybe we'll be at 9 p.m., we'll be here, Nicole and I, giving you live analysis as our final hurrah before we go on vacation tomorrow. With that, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense to come back. We appreciate every single one of you. If you have not signed up to support our show already, we really would appreciate it. That is how we earn a living, is from people who pay $5 a month for the show. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. While you're there, you can check out our merch store. We have a couple smalls and mediums left in our Common Sense 2024 collection, and they are heavily discounted because we have so few sizes left. With that, we will have a show on Sunday for subscribers, of course, and then we will see all of you tonight, hopefully, 9 p.m. for live debate coverage, and then we'll be back with our live show Monday at noon. No show Wednesday or Thursday, so I hope you miss us. I hope you say nice things. Send us nice emails telling us how much you miss us. And I'll miss you too while I'm drinking and gambling in Vegas and obviously behaving myself. Okay, see you later.